Hi, welcome to Holden Village. Today is Friday, July 5th, 1996. In the fireside room this morning, our speaker is Richard Evans. Today's session number is 1 and is titled Music, the Lively Art. Let's listen in.
And the title of the session is Music, the Lively Art. When I've given this session in the past, people always change the word that I use. I like to use lively with a dash because I know I'm coining a different kind of word. This lecture has been around for a while, and you will find that it has a lot of points to be made on what does music mean and how does it relate to being a human being. And you'll find, as I believe, all arts, while their effect can be magical, they do come right out of the human spirit. So what I always like to do in music lectures is start off with a recording. And I'd like you to meditate, maybe shut your eyes unless you don't want to, and just let the music do the work. Just listen to how this music affects you. And I always give you the title at some point, and if I don't, you stop me. Made up of pitch, rhythm, dynamics, and tone color. These are the objective elements in music, and we deal with these at length in music study in order to understand music. Yet I'm sure that you were more aware of your feelings after you heard this piece by Debussy, the nuages, clouds from his nocturnes. My boat is named after the second movement, which means the festival. I have a San Juan 21 sailboat, and believe you me, it's festival. What is it in music that moves us to have certain feelings about it? Being a part of human creativity, music has some affinity with human life. And I hope that we can begin to understand the nature of this affinity today. Not with a lot of visual props, but listening to the music alone. Now, people have tried to examine this aspect of music, and there are many differences of opinions. You know, we say the social sciences are 100 years behind the physical sciences, and I think philosophical aesthetics is another 100 years behind that, but we're working on it, and there are some good thoughts out there. I think it necessary to think about the issue of what music means, because we all have listening equipment, our ears, and our listening results in some type of individual taste. So we're going to start. So let's say today that instead of yours truly, President Bill Clinton, and for the Republicans, we better have Dole here too, but let's say that they're going to come up to Holden Village, and I, as the music director, have been asked to provide some kind of ceremonial music for his entrance into the Village Center. Now, I would be tempted to use this music for myself, but trying to deal with my humility, I won't. But what is it about this piece that you think is appropriate for such an entrance? If I could get this thing in. There we go. It's American. What is it?
Appalachian Spring.
And it's the grand statement of the Shaker melody, upon which the folk hymn Lord of the Dance is based. Simple Gifts. And you see, that was used in 1962. Some of you may not remember, but I do, when Khrushchev came over. And every night, CBS Reports would open its program with that theme to know that something earth-shattering was going on. Khrushchev was here. And I especially remember the night that he had to sit on the train in Anaheim because the security people would not let him go to Disneyland, and he was very grumpy about it. But on the other hand, you know, that's the way it was. So it's the gesture, the grand gesture. Now let's say that Queen Elizabeth is coming over to see us, and I've been asked to pick another piece. And after all, the British and the U.S. government did fight over this territory, and we finally got the 49th parallel as our border. And I have been asked to pick a piece for her entrance. You let me know if you think I'm going to keep my job. Shostakovich got the wrong piece of his. Now maybe if Tim Conway or Don Knotts were going to come in, I could use that Shostakovich piece. It'd be, you see, over a period of many years, we have been conditioned to respond in certain ways to music. And it is certainly and primarily in the duration of music that we have a factor that corresponds to life. Art exists, visual art exists, in two or three dimensions. The painting is two dimensions. The sculpture is three. But music exists in time, life, not the publisher. Music exists in time, life, space. As our lives exist in time, so does music as an art form exist in time. As we experience life, it can be exciting, fast-paced, dull, slow, familiar, foreign, and many other qualities. And it's the same with music. Okay? So that is what our friend Suzanne Langer, a woman philosopher from this century, has come up with. And we'll read some of her definitions in a bit. But let's go on now with something that is very pronounced in its affect. You tell me what you would do with this next piece. How would you use this? Or what kind of state of being does it, is it a morning piece? Is it, that's M-O-R or M-O-U-R, who knows, you know? And you'll see a very set state of being. Positive nature about it.
Okay. And it's a very lush interpretation of that piece.
Yeah. However, yeah. It just lends itself that way. But at least they did one thing right. They rolled the harpsichord at the beginning for the chord. Did you hear that? Boom, like that. And are you an early instrument fan? Because I have a book by Nicholas Harancourt we can look at. But you're onto something here. And that has to be with what he says, we need to get into the zeitgeist. That's another lecture in itself. Do we want to do it the way Bach would have done it? It'd be much clearer and crisper, maybe a little faster. Or do we want to run it through the sieve of the history of 250 years and do it that way? Very good, very good. All right, now that particular system depends on the major-minor system, major-minor scales. And it's been around for ever since 1600. The Renaissance, they took all the white notes on the piano and they started dabbling with an F sharp and a B flat, and lo and behold, they came up with a series of scales. So now I want you to listen to this next piece and see what you think, how it fits in. By the way, you know that was the air on the G string from Orchestra Suite number 3 by every Lutheran's favorite, J.S. Bach. I hope that's true, because I didn't grow up a Lutheran, and I claim it. Also, by the way, after this one, I have to do some rewinding, so hang in there. Here we go. Thank you. Okay, I'm sure you want me to push the button sooner than later, most likely, but you know, we might have some real contemporary people here. That was Concerto for Prepared Piano and Orchestra by John Cage. You might have expected that. And you may not have gotten into what he's talking about, but at least you had a feeling of foreignness. Even though, and we face that, don't we? We face the concept, the human feeling of something that's foreign. There is hope for our appreciation, because it says that I quoted this the other day in a session, that one of the theories of aesthetics is that with repeated listenings, we will grow to understand it. We don't have to like it, but we'll grow to understand it. And also that difficult pieces make us scramble. They make us try to perceive it, try to penetrate the work, try to understand it. And this is where sometimes we struggle in our culture, because we like music to be easy. We want it in the background or something. Our poor musician Don, the horn player, was so struck by his first night here. I had to remind him it was a camp, but when he played his solo for the prelude, there was so much talking. He says, "Well, did you hear it?" You know, we are used to doing things. In fact, my wife's church, she plays a piece so they can visit, and then they have a call to worship, and then she plays a prelude, and they're supposed to listen. So this minister's smart. He accommodates both things. That you can talk while this is going on, but the next one she plays is the prelude, and you use that to worship. Okay, sometimes a composer will combine something old, something new. And Charles Ives, one of my favorite composers, and you're probably all thinking, well, you really are weird, after all, he does some wonderful things in a piece called When General William Booth Enters into Heaven. I've actually heard this as an anthem at the Trinity Episcopal Cathedral in Princeton. It's between the governor's mansion, the university, and the Presbyterian Seminary, and George Gallup's office, and George Jr. goes to that church. So I figure if you want to think elite, 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 you could think that they could put up with this. But listen to modernity with a good old gospel song and figure out how Ives gets us through that. Uses. Oh, please, come back. Okay, we're off here. Composers, as creators, are great not in expressing their personal feelings, although Gustav Mahler gets away with this, that's something we'll talk about tomorrow morning, but even more in being aware of the universals of human feeling. A closer examination of musical data will help us observe details that correspond with everyday events in our lives. We have rise and fall of feelings, don't we? You know, is the bus going to get there on time? The boat's crowded tomorrow, will I get a seat? We're tense. We get a seat, we relax. We have free-flowing events, suddenly it stops. You know, a lot of musicians say the best part in music is the quiet, because you don't know what's going to happen next and it grabs your attention. Motion and rest, tension, relaxation, preparation, unity, and then we have variety. Another way of looking at music is to say that we have an art whose form is dynamic action. Just as we move through time with feelings and actions, we can experience those things in music. Dancers moving, birds flying, runners moving, trees swaying. Music has this kind of quality to it. It is motion in sound. Music as sound is a symbol of motion. And here we need to go to our patron saint, saintess, patroness, Suzanne Langer. She talks about symbolic representation in the 20th century. Let me just read a couple quotes, and then we will get on with this. She attempted to give art the claim to meaning that science was given through Whitehead's analysis of symbolic modes, distinguishing non-discursive symbols of art. Now that's tacit knowledge, knowledge that cannot be verbalized. In fact, I think music is so great for non-verbal. There are things going on in opera you'd get arrested for if you tried to do that in real life. So you can have a little subliminal kind of joining there, you know? Really, there are expressions and feelings in music that go beyond the words. That's why we like it. She submitted that art, especially music, is a highly articulated form of expression symbolizing direct or intuitive knowledge of life patterns, feeling, motion, emotion, which ordinary language is unable to convey. She points out, like in science, has anybody, as an empirical scientist, ever seen an atomic reaction? No. But I would fill all these boards to get the symbolic representation of a mathematic formula to represent that, wouldn't I? At least Einstein did. I wouldn't. I don't know where to start. Well, there is that E equals something. Right? But she's saying all through our lives, something as simple as this, even in language, you all have an idea of what this is. Oh, you know, English, Spanish, and German. And something like this, you know. And that, and this drawing itself is just a symbolic representation with a very bad roof, because I didn't do it very well. House. So Langer says that music is a symbol in sound of dynamic feeling, whether it's physical motion, emotion, or something intuitive. Sometimes a great composer grabs something that speaks to us all for a long time, and that's why we have old pieces that are still renewed by us, because they still speak to us. Okay? So let's get into this idea of motion. Let's first of all listen to something and see again, I'm not trying to put you to sleep, but we're going to use another Ives piece and see what the state of being would be. Sorry, this recording is not coming through. I may have to redo it. All right. Here we go. I've used this in church, by the way. Mm-hmm. I've used that in Lent with a choir, and it's from that. Dear Lord and Father of mankind, da dum pa da. Only this starts on the third verse, and does the third and the fourth. Okay, that's one state of being, and I use that in church. Okay. Next. Comes by and the elephants and everything. And you know, this is Americana. Any of you live close to that museum in Wisconsin where they have the circus museum? I'd love to go to it. I know where the Wisconsin Dells are in Milwaukee, and that's about it. Well, I know where Green Bay is because the football team, but anyhow, that's another story, isn't it? Well, this music has so much variety. One of the current major trends in music uses patterns. Notice the patterns on the wall. Notice the patterns over here on this painting. A lot of rock and roll depends on pattern, but wonder of wonders, Baroque music, our dear friend Bach, relies on a repeated bass pattern, like a passacaglia, a chaconne, a ground bass, things like that. And there's a lot of affinity there. Students, especially, will tie in to earlier music if you show similar elements. And that's what we get in music. We get similar human experience. And so, you know, the way music education has been going lately, we are truncating our students' emotional life by not expanding more vehicles for which them to express themselves. Of course, we spend our whole lives on this, don't we? Anyhow, one of the major recent developments is minimalism. And I'm proud to say, this is not very nice, but we have a scholarship at Whitworth that is given to a student who does not study minimalism. The person who gave it is now dead. It was so against minimalism that they just did not give it, because we don't study this except in theory here and there. But anyhow, you have incessant repetitions with variations at certain moments. Now, I think minimalism is very reflective of the routine of our contemporary lives. Just think of, for instance, the assembly line, where the person does the same thing all the time, you know. Carburetor, air cleaner, fender, four bolts, you know. Over and over. And I know they're varying that to help with worker satisfaction. But minimalism has that routine that we get ourselves caught into. So as you listen to John Adams' Short Ride on a Fast Machine, this is played by an orchestra. I heard it in Spokane. The percussion section said they just about died trying to get it right, even though it's going to sound very, very simple to us. Think of that 20th century repetitiveness that music is here trying to express. getting sleepy, so I don't want to lose you at all. But you can tell, and you just get into the pattern, it shifts, which helps with the interest. We have a painting right near our main office in our department where the fellow has, one of our college artists has done just a series of stripes. And getting the pattern is so difficult. And people walk up the stairs and see it, and over the years they've tried to say, can't we get this out of here? You know, and I won't let them, because it's a good way to get them awake for their 8 o'clock classes to look at it. But it's so wonderful once you figure out the pattern, and it's way out here beyond the painting. And you have a little bit of that in this piece. Well, as with any activity, there's always a close or an ending. Unfortunately for 110 of us, including myself, our stay at Holden will end tomorrow. You know, a flock of birds will land on a lake and that's the end of their flight. A carpenter finishes sawing when the short piece, we hope, or the right end of the limb falls off. It's over. We all look for things to be over. Not here, though. We would like to stay here. In music, there are ways to close things just as there are ways to end a play. Beethoven is known for the lengthy endings of his works. It is almost as if he's unsure that we know the composition is over and he wants to make sure. It's like the end of a lover's quarrel where there's probably still a little spark, you know, between the two, but, you know, go on, I never want to see you again. Get out of here, it's over. Get out of my sight. Why don't you just say go out the door and be done with it? But you're a little unsure, you know, you kind of want, but maybe they'll come back or something. Well, listen to this end of the last movement of Symphony No. 5. Symphony No. 3 is even worse, but I thought this would suffice. But Beethoven's going to hammer away that it's over. Playful or humorous musical gestures that composers include. And I'd like to do a session next time I come on just humor and music. And of course, I have the Bernstein tape, so I'll borrow liberally. But some gestures are not obvious, but they do correspond to everyday gestures we engage in when we play. What is funny in music? Well, an instrument playing in an uncharacteristic overture, register overture. Remember Flip Wilson in the old days when he was Geraldine, you know, when the basso profundo sings in the high voice, playing wrong notes or seemingly so, abruptness, surprise, catching us off guard. So listen to this Darius Milhaud. His music is just full of humor. Listen as essentially translated bull on a roof. I think it's like bull in a china shop. And listen for the flute. As the flute plays a scale and goes off the track. And there's a little scraping in the bass viol. You hear all sorts of funny gestures. Milhaud, the serious French composer who said American jazz was serious music long before those of us here at home woke up to the fact. All right, here we go. I think. Okay, there we go. A little Chopin there to lead us in. Thank you. feel like I'm down on the Riviera. We're only going to see reviews that I shouldn't tell my wife about, and since she just walked in, I better not tell her. That way, you know, but it's just fun stuff, and little wrong notes, and one little flute part where you go, da 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 da, you know. I'm going to tell mommy on you, you know, this kind of thing. Well, you know, music can be extremely expressive and extremely heavy. I don't know if you've heard of Gorecki.
Yep.
All right, his third symphony. The day of the Oklahoma bombing last year, our public radio station pulled out the last movement of that, in which the mother of a Holocaust victim is doing a prayer for her son. It is one of the most wonderful statements of any kind, a sobering thing. But what else can you do but use this music? It was cathartic for us that we were in our offices at school tuning into public radio. And I'd like you to hear a part of this, just because it is so terrible, but so terribly important and so terribly expressive of things when things go wrong.
Thank you.
I think, is the woman, Dawn Upshaw, that she's the soprano in this particular recording. I've tried to look at music today as closely related to human experience. It occupies time, space, as our lives do. The events of life often compare to the events of motion in music, that is, dynamic form. Music can give us the feeling for the spirit of an age. You want to go back to the Renaissance? Visit a cathedral when they're doing some Josquin or Palestrina. We can look at music objectively, rhythm, dynamics, tone colors, and sometimes we have to sidestep our prejudices. A lot of time when I teach, I'll play a recording and not tell them the name, because the minute you tell a name or a composer, they'll place it as an old piece. The wonderful thing about music is it's new because it's here. It's being performed right now. Music has its expressive qualities. Interrelated to our humanity and our faith, it is important in a society such as ours, and especially in the church, because it gives voice to feelings that we cannot express using discursive language, using words. There's another philosopher, Michael Polanyi, out there who talks about tacit knowledge. Music is knowledge that you cannot discuss. And that's just what Suzanne Langer said about it. And so I could put down a piece like William Tell Overture, not tell you the title, you would recognize that, especially the Lone Ranger part. And I find a lot of people know what it is, but they don't know the name of it. That's non-discursive information. That's tacit information. I'd like to quote from Harold Best, my friend that I've used this week in other settings. He talks about that great music does not just come about by amassing detail. Instead, true artistry is more a matter of exquisite timing and spacing among all the parts, and we can say that for visual art, certainly on spacing. How to make something, how much of it to make, and when to change or stop. Another esthetician talks about anything created, we select our materials and then we arrange them. The lady that was here earlier in the week who talked about her artistic effort was to set a good table, flower arranging. You go out and you select the flowers. Somebody went out and did iris and daisies and put a beautiful bouquet on that service table up there. We all do that. I noticed you all didn't wear gray today. A lot of selection went on today in color and things. We also then use music, though, as something that correlates to our active life and then is a means to get expressive. And that's what great composers do. And I probably, over a period of time, could help you to do some composing. At school, we have removable bells. And maybe I'll give you four notes, two of you. You go take four notes. It's amazing what people can do when they don't have to go through the technology, all that theory and all that. You should know notation. You should know how to read music. But sometimes people are very expressive, and unfortunately our culture doesn't give all children those basics of reading music and things like that. Well, just about done, and we'll have some time for discussion. I was talking with Dr. Farrell this morning about all the problems in the world, and yet how to keep hope. How do we keep our hope? We heard that heavy Goretzky thing about something that very, very bad happened to us last year. Well, here's something I think that can give us a sense of hope.
Thank you.
take Peggy Lee's song from 1969 and is that all there is? Bring out the booze and let's have a ball if our faith is in vain. But the reason we're here is that we believe otherwise in spite of the evidence. Faith is in spite of the evidence, isn't it? Well, I certainly have enjoyed having you here today and discussing one of my favorite topics, how to penetrate music and how it becomes a vital part of our life. And maybe some of you have comments or questions. And feel free, especially contribute.
I didn't catch the name of the tape on the Holocaust.
That's Goretzky's Third Symphony.
Isn't it Gorky?
In Polish, they say, they put a C, it's so funny, C-K. My doctor's Polish, Stachicki, but it's spelled like Stachicki. It's like Penderecki. It looks like in English, it's hard sound. Yeah. Oh, and that's the other thing, you'd be so intimidated in pronunciations in music. Just remember the guy and his music, you know? Goretzky. I don't know why that is, but a lot of Polish names.
Polish names are totally
insane. Yeah. It's Goretzky's Third Symphony.
Yeah, we thank you. You don't follow the rules of English.
Well, no, because it's Polish. Yeah. German is close to English, well, unfortunately, I thought it was way out there.
Talking about the humor in the music, yeah. My kids are in the Youth Symphony, and when they did their concert this spring, one of the pieces that the older kids did was the Peter Sheckley piece.
Oh, yeah.
And I got to laughing. I mean, my kids were looking at me, the ones that weren't up there. And I was laughing till I had tears just from the funny sounds that, you know, I had them use just the mouthpieces and this and that, you know, making, and within the framework of this, you know, very formal symphony setting, it was just hilarious.
I was in Fargo in April at North Dakota State, and there is a Fargo Moorhead Symphony Orchestra, and they rehearse right there in the music building.
Yeah.
So he's, and you know, the other thing is, you have to know a little bit about music to get him, otherwise you can be offended. But the musical cliches and the stuff he does is just marvelous.
Well, last night was an example, too. The
Handel
piece.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That was
great.
And you couldn't explain it to the children, really.
What's wrong with our adults? Why are they laughing?
And Jack and Jill go up the hill through the history of music. You know, that's another one like that. They're just marvelous.
Yes.
And, you know, the Haverford studies from about 20 years ago indicated that the one quality that you need to have by the time you're 42 to survive is a sense of humor. And I'm convinced that that's it. You've got to be able to laugh at yourself and do some of these things.
And that's what makes Victor Borge funny.
Oh, yeah. And when he plays the thing upside down and pulls it down, and like again, William Tell, da 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 da, and then he turns it right, da 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 da, you know, it goes up instead of down because he's got the music upside down or something. Well, any other questions, comments? You're very delightful.
Did you say you had something on jazz, of course?
Well, what I'm doing is cooking up next year's menu. And I've already thought of some things like the spiritual source of jazz, the spiritual nature, jazz as chamber music, jazz as true melting pot, which it is. It's completely melded. Also doing things on the masterpieces of 20th century music, like the Chichester Psalms of Bernstein from 1965, things like that. So I'm cooking up some topics that I think would be of interest. You may want to suggest some things to me too.
Do you know when you'll be here?
Don't. I really don't. But I'm gonna meet with them before I leave tomorrow and make some suggestions.
Mm-hmm.
They usually,
In a business environment, we have all these classes on motivation and getting us charged up for the day and affirmations and positive thinking, etc. Maybe we should have a class on music to start the day by, so that we get off on the right foot.
Right. And what you need to do is have in your car cassette those pieces.
Yeah.
For instance, lately I've been using the piano music of Gershwin. That's wonderful to put just about, I only live a mile and a half from the campus, but it's just right to hear a few pieces, you know. And I don't know about you, but I stay with a piece for a while. I just drive into the ground of anybody else's standard, but I just listen.
Well, it's more fun if it's familiar. I mean,
yeah.
It's like hearing a story over. Yeah. If you hear a good story, you want to hear it again.
Yeah. And the great conductors all indicate that the great works, they're always looking anew. Mm-hmm. And it's usually smaller details or a larger synthesis of how it fits together and how they should interpret it.
In the Minneapolis area, anyway, I imagine other school areas are having the same battle because of finances. They're cutting back on the instrumental programs.
Yeah.
And people here are fighting for the life of the salmon, which is good. But we musicians are having to fight for the life of music and for what it does for the young people. And psychologists are coming out with very important statements that
all the time
that music is a criterion of it releases the mind processes, and the act of producing music brings other dimensions into your thinking.
Well, first of all, how do you receive information? Ears, eyes, touch. Mm-hmm. If those senses are honed at an early age, then the brain is developed. There's a Czechoslovakian psychologist who talks about the aural center back here at the base of the brain, that you better have significant musical experiences by the time you're 12, or that won't be developed. And then the thing about, Mozart makes me smarter. There's money. It's just that our culture is going through a frightful time of how they're going to use their money. There's money. There's money, but a lot of people are keeping it.
Well, it's going for sports, things. Of course. Well, that's the big cry.
And there's some places where that's getting cut, too. Mm-hmm. Oregon's going to go through some bloodletting here. I hear in the Bay Area there's probably 5 good instrumental programs. Mm-hmm. You know, and the music and the children, where we are, we have a very good school district. And in the late 70s, some of my colleagues in music got together and went to the school board and said, we will have an elementary teacher in every elementary school, and we do. Suddenly the choirs and the bands and the orchestras and everything got better. But that's basic. Those kids come in with a higher level of readiness. But there's the left side and the right side of the brain. And since the Enlightenment, we've dealt mainly with the left side because we're a technological age. But the right side is about being human. And all that technology and all that is gone. When a trained musician listens, both sides light up. It's a synthesis of the intellect and the emotion. But at least when an untrained person listens, at least the right side lights up. They're getting something for that side, the non-sequential. But there's lots of stuff out there. It's just that, what do we want to put our money to? And that's the culture. But we're hanging on for dear life, making noise.
I was going to say that I saw a poster for the youth music, and it said when children learn music, they learn about harmony. Because they learn to work together.
Oh.
They have to learn to work together.
Nothing like an ensemble to do that. Yes?
Well, I was just thinking about, I've been a musician all my life, but our 2 little grandchildren, it was just such a delight. Lars was not even a year old. Hannah was just maybe 2 and a half. And we were just having fun in the living room one day, just playing. We have a stereo set that's in a music bench my husband built years ago. So you lift the lid, turn it on.
Yeah.
You got the music. And so they were getting kind of bored. So I did this. I just lifted the lid and turned on the music. Well, here comes all this. And it happened to me. It was the radio that was on. It just happened to be Strauss. The Tales from the Vienna Woods.
Yeah.
And here comes all this, marvelous waltz. And those kids just came alive. Lars was sitting in my lap, and immediately he started feeling that beat, and he was just, and it was such a joy to experience, because, they're not taught. It just is so totally spontaneous. Yeah. That reaction at that very, very tiny age, you know, being a new grandmother. This was, you know, exciting, even though you know these things in all your life, but to see that.
Lots of books and records at home for the little babies, and they'll keep going. One more, and then our time is...
Okay, we just come back from Camp Pendleton Marine Base, and if you want motivation and music to stir people up, now you realize this goes way, way back to motivate people at home, but in the morning, to start out with, they have the bands and the...
Sure.
You see those guys perk right up. It's just amazing.
Yeah, yeah. Comes out of the French, 1789, the first military band. And the reason the Dixieland band's the way it is that the Spanish and the French in our country, before the Louisiana Purchase, had those bands, and the African Americans picked off the trumpet and the clarinet and the trombone to play in their Dixieland bands and those funeral bands. It was really fun. Well, tomorrow, if you are here or are interested, I'm going to do a thing on the music of Mahler.
I'd like to be here. I love Mahler. Good. You had a little negative.
Well, I'm going to, okay, well, I didn't like it, and suddenly I caught on, and now I'm a devotee.
Did you see that Peanuts cartoon on Mahler?
Yeah, yeah, being Mahlerized.
Yeah, I thought that
I've been Mahlerized.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.